funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
Donald Trump had a super Tuesday this week, and Senator Ted Cruz had a decent one. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. The seven-state contest Mr. Trump won and the three chalked up to Senator Cruz have thrilled their supporters and convinced some skeptics that they have what it takes to compete favorably against a Democratic opponent in November. But while voters may be embracing these GOP frontrunners precisely because they are viewed as outsiders, both are polarizing figures within their own party. So can the Republican Party unify behind whichever candidate wins the most state primaries to help propel a Republican to the White House in 2016? We have two Republican activists here to talk about this. Wade Emmert is chairman of the Republican Party of Dallas County, and Neil Katz is executive director of the Republican Party of Collin County. Guys, welcome to Think.
Oh, this is great. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
From your perspective, how is this primary season different than past ones?
Well, the Trump factor. I mean, Trump has changed all the rules when it comes to political campaigns. From the beginning, from the moment he announced, he kind of announced, you know, his candidacy in kind of a firestorm of controversy about immigration comments. And he really hasn't changed a whole lot. He's kind of changed the way he talks about some of the issues. But everything has been about Trump from the first day he got into this race. And it really has kind of sucked the air out of the room for the other candidates who had records of accomplishment. But they just couldn't break through this Trump noise.
Totally agree on that. You know, Trump came in, immigration, hot issue, Texas, border state, of course. But he's tapped the nerve of people who want something different. They're looking at the old-style Washington politician, both parties. They go to Washington. They promise, they promise, they promise. They're looking for a fresh voice, and he's providing it.
So you said, Wade, that Donald Trump has changed the rules. I wonder if he's just created his own set of rules that apply only to him, because it seems to me that some of the things that he has said and done would not fly for other candidates. We've seen other candidates have to leave previous races for far less surprising comments.
Yeah, but the reason why that's the case is that his comments play into a brand, a brand that people who like him are attracted to. And so the more he reinforces that type of brand, the stronger he gets among those folks who support him. You know, I think you know, you've got Ted Cruz and you've got Donald Trump, and people who support Donald Trump, they don't support him because they think he's the most conservative guy in the race. They support him because they feel like he is the guy that can make change in the race if he were actually elected. And so when he, you know, in his typical kind of bravado type of way of talking, people like that, and they feel like, boy, this guy, he may not be the most conservative, he may not speak about the issues the way I would. But boy, I really think he's got the substance to really make a difference and change Washington when, you know, so many other people have promised to do that and haven't.
Candidates aside temporarily, what are the most important issues to Republican voters in this election cycle? What are you all hearing from constituents?
We're looking at a variety of issues, Chris. The economy is important, jobs and all that. The job number looks low, 4 or 5% for unemployment. But a lot of people are taking jobs for lesser wages right now, et cetera. Two, they're looking at border security. Three, a lot of people I talk to are looking at the presidency also for the fact the president is a commander-in-chief and runs the military. And people look more at domestic issues. This year, I think they're looking at foreign issues. You have ISIS, you have Al-Qaeda, you have the Taliban, you have Boko Haram, et cetera. So the military background and how the person is going to do militarily in foreign policy is much more important than it's ever been.
Yeah, I mean, besides those issues, I mean, if you're going to step back a little bit and look kind of the 1,000-foot, I think people want to be proud of America. And over the past 8 years, if you feel like this president has made America weaker abroad or maybe has made the economy, you know, has not made the economy as strong as it could have been with different principles, you feel like the president is, you know, with all of his executive orders has really kind of, you know, trying to usurp some power from Congress. I mean, if you're those types of folks that feel that way, you're looking for America to be put back on track. And that's why I say it is about those issues, but I think this campaign is more about who can put us back on track. Is it Ted Cruz, who is certainly very conservative? Is it Marco Rubio, who's probably more, you know, in the establishment lane of the party? Or is it Donald Trump who's kind of made his own highway? You know, he's not in anybody's lane. He's got his own highway. And so I think that's what people are looking at. And this feeling of, you know, wanting America great again, I think transcends some of these issues. And I think that's why we're seeing so many people being engaged in this process.
Is it more challenging from the perspective of people running campaigns to sort of push back against a president and administration that's not coming back, right? No matter what happens in November, the administration of President Barack Obama is over.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. I mean, I think also that's part of what's going to, I think, hurt Hillary, too. I mean, she kind of inherits, you know, she's got her own problems, so she's going to inherit, you know, Barack Obama's issues. She's got to own those, and she's got to deal with her own issues from email to, yes, Benghazi and some of these other things. And so she kind of has to deal with both challenges.
She's got to say what she's going to improve at the same time not knocking the present administration, which she was part of.
So it's also a balancing act on that end.
They're always a balancing act. And, you know, Hillary, I mean, I don't know if we want to get into Hillary or not, but her, you know, she's got a more fundamental problem than that. I mean, she's certainly well known. In fact, everybody knows who she is, and everybody already has a perception about her. Either you like her or you don't. And I think on the likability scale, you know, she certainly doesn't rank as high as Barack Obama did. He's seems to be a likable guy, in person. Even George W. Bush, everybody, likable guy. Hillary doesn't have that likability factor. Now, neither does Donald Trump, I think. That's not his brand. But as more and more people start learning of him or Ted Cruz in the political context, you know, I think those candidates and Marco Rubio, they have a higher upside because people, I think, once they get to know them, they can create an impression in their minds. I think Hillary, that ship's already sailed, and it's just now a question of her trying to get those who like her to the polls so she can win the nomination.
There are some interesting questions, I think, about how you run a candidate against Hillary Clinton, who may, as you say, have a likability problem compared to some other people who have run as the Democratic nominee or the Republican nominee, for that matter. On the other hand, people have disliked her for a long time. There may be no surprises, which can be a helpful tool, right, in running against a prominent candidate.
Yeah, so whether you're a vice president or you're a cabinet member, you know, secretary of state or defense, you know, people in the typical situation, when you come out of that umbrella from the prior administration, people get to know you personally for the first time. But that's not the case with Hillary Clinton because we knew her personally as First Lady and then, of course, as Senator of New York. So people already have an impression of her. They either like her or they don't. I don't see her being able to change that much.
She's a known quantity, is the bottom line.
How united are the religious and secular wings of the Republican Party this season? For example, is the gap growing between, like, Tea Party Republicans and Evangelical Republicans and Libertarian Republicans, some of which may not be entirely mutually exclusive?
Well, you know, all parties have their groups. Democrats have their splits. We have our splits. I'm seeing a lot of the Tea Party people, you know, really hanging tough right now, wanting a Tea Party type candidate, wanting someone who's conservative, not only on the social side, but more so on the fiscal side. You know, the Libertarians also are there, but it seems to me there is some divisions in the party right now, which we're trying to work with and try and cohese. And the problem will be getting everybody to remember that whoever the candidate is, that's the Republican standard bearer, and that's who we as a party have to unite behind.
You know, traditionally, the evangelical vote has been a core vote in the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And historically, when Senator Cruz was what became Senator Cruz, you had that evangelical vote coalescing behind him, along with other you know, Tea Party support. And I think that was the reason for his victory. This presidential cycle, I think Senator Cruz came into it expecting, you know, to be the favored candidate for the evangelical vote. And interestingly, you know, he certainly has tapped into that, but Donald Trump has tapped into that too. And we see in South Carolina, which is a, you know, pretty heavy evangelical vote, evangelicals, you know, voted for Trump more than they did Cruz. So there seems to be almost a break between, you know, evangelical votes voting on religious or faith, you know, reasons, and instead, again, voting for Donald Trump, who certainly does not have, you know, the types of, you know, religious credentials that a Ted Cruz would have. And again, I think it's because we go back to the fundamental proposition that people are supporting Donald Trump not because he's the most conservative, but because they think he can make the change. And so, you know, it's fascinating to me that we're seeing the evangelical vote kind of shift away from an evangelical candidate to somebody that's certainly not an evangelical candidate.
To the extent that there is frustration and anger among American voters right now, I mean, a lot of it certainly could be directed at the Obama administration and the things that have happened over the last 8 years. But to the extent that there's frustration within the party, what do you think is the source of that?
A lot of times the Republican Party, people were sent to Washington with the idea that you give us the Senate, you give us the House, we will make change, we will come up, we will change things going on. It's been status quo. There still are budget deficits. Immigration has not been handled. I think it's more of a case of things have not been handled more than a case of which what policy is. And people are frustrated. You look at the turnout in this election. We had 116,000 people vote in Collin County. Our record for a primary was 56,000 before this date. We more than doubled. And people are voicing their opinion. They're voicing their anger at the same time. And their anger at both parties, not just one.
You know, I mean, the Republican Party has always been a party of coalitions or constituencies. You've always had the evangelical vote. You've always had those who are Republicans for national security reasons or military reasons or, you know, fiscal reasons. So the fact that there are factions or different constituencies in the party is nothing new. What's interesting to me is that these constituencies seem to be now favoring different types of candidates, whether it be the Donald Trump or the Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio. I think overlaying all of that, however, is just really a dissatisfaction with D.C. and a dissatisfaction with kind of what they perceive as the status quo, a broken system. And so they're looking for to somebody that's outside of that structure, which Donald Trump and really even Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, first-term senators, are.
Governor Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, 2012 nominee for the Republicans, made a much-anticipated speech today and characterized Donald Trump as a danger to the country. What was your response to that address?
It was kind of interesting because in 2012 he was wholeheartedly endorsing him and talking about, you know, what he's done that's good for America, how he was a good businessman, et cetera. You know, my personal wish in this business, I know that politics, you have to say what's going on, but we could work together in politics, and a speech like that does more harm than good when you're talking about down. You know, Reagan had the 11th commandment, thou shalt not harm a fellow Republican. And, you know, I stand by it. I'm sure Wade stands by it the same way. And this goes against that grain. We can't do that. You're only giving fodder to the opposition party in November.
Well, yeah, I mean, Governor Romney is certainly entitled to his own opinion. But in some ways, boy, he's just playing right into Donald Trump's hands. The more time you denounce Donald Trump, you're just strengthening his support among, you know, his supporters and maybe even those who want change. You know, Mitt Romney, for a lot of people, is the epitome of establishment, and if you've got establishment guy criticizing you, then boy, that's a badge of honor to those who are outside that brand.
Who feel like the establishment is the worst.
Yeah, it's
way
part
to
of
go.
The, it's part of the problem. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that that's my view, but I'm saying that's the view that's shared by a lot of Republican primary voters out there.
My guests are Wade Emmert, who is chairman of the Republican Party of Dallas County, and Neil Katz, executive director of the Republican Party of Collin County. We're talking about post-Super Tuesday GOP strategy. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, we have lines open at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour about post-Super Tuesday GOP strategy with Neil Katz, who's executive director of the Republican Party of Dallas, of Collin County, excuse me, and Wade Emmert, chairman of the Republican Party of Dallas County. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Neil Katz, there is no question that Mr. Trump attracts media attention. Do you think in this primary season that attention has taken focus off the other candidates running behind him at this point, so that, for example, Senators Cruz and Rubio have had a harder time differentiating themselves in the minds of voters?
I don't think they've had a hard time differentiating themselves, but you look past them. You look at the Carsons, you look at the Kasichs. You know, Carson's great line in the debate, "Will someone please attack me so I can say something?" The press is honing in on Mr. Trump. When it comes to a debate, they're asking him all the questions. He's taking a lot of the air out of the room, as they say, you know, in the expression. But I think people see a difference between Cruz and Trump a little bit. Trump is more so personality. I'm the outsider. America will be great. Cruz has demonstrated what he's going to do in the Senate. That's the bottom line. He's a little bit of a known quantity. Trump, you hear about what he's saying, but the substance has not been there yet. I think people also start wanting more substance out of Donald Trump.
Yeah, Donald Trump, I mean, he came into it. He's the reality TV star kind of guy and the author art of the deal and, you know, kind of bigger than life kind of guy. And he really kind of assumed that position early on in this campaign. And when you had so many other Republican candidates in the race to begin with, something like 16, so, you know, people were looking at who is going to be the guy that, you know, who attracts the most attention. Well, it's going to be Trump, given the way he talks about issues and not necessarily in a positive way, but, you know, the way he, you know, attacked Fox News and Megyn Kelly and this and, I mean, everything, you know, time and time again, those kept him top of mind among Republican voters. And he early on captured the minds of those who were answering questions in the polls. And so that story kind of kept feeding itself. And yeah, I think you look at some of these other candidates. You know, take Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin. He was in the race with really a great record of accomplishment, and yet he never broke through. You know, in these debates, when you have, you know, on the main stage, you know, 7 or 8 candidates or 10 candidates, he just never broke through. And you know, it was in part the Trump effect. Or look at Jeb Bush, who was raising a ton of money when he first got into the race, still had a ton of money, and people felt like he could certainly hold on throughout the nomination process and maybe ultimately win it. He just never broke through. And what's interesting is you saw each of these also-ran candidates change throughout this process. Once they realized the Trump factor was so strong, they started changing the way they started talking about Trump. Rick Perry early on realized that if he was going to have any type of chance to get on the main stage, he's going to have to draw some attention. And so he criticized Trump, and that backfired on him. I think that scared other candidates, kept them from doing it. Now, when they realize that Donald Trump is you know leading in the delegate count and that he is probably the presumptive nominee of the party, they're starting to come out swinging. And it may have been a little too late. So it's been interesting the way that not only he has dominated the discussion, but also how the other candidates have treated him with kid gloves many times and then now coming out a little bit more forceful.
In modern history, the candidate of either party that wins Super Tuesday has gone on to be the nominee for that party. We don't want to assume that that's going to happen this time, but it's what's happened in the past. So if a candidate, Trump, is at the top of the Republican ticket, what happens for somebody who is running as an establishment Republican lower on the ticket for Congress or, you know, in another state for Senate?
Well, I mean, it'll be the general election, so it'll be the choice will be between the Republican and the Democrat. So hopefully, no matter, you know, any Republican who comes out or anybody that comes out to vote for Trump, hopefully, you know, they'll vote for the other Republican, you know, down ballot as well. I think the bigger concern is maybe in areas, you know, like Dallas County that has more minority vote or more Democrat vote. Does Trump bring Democrats out to vote against him? I mean, does he? I don't think Hillary's going to be that great of motivator, but maybe their motivation is not Trump. You know, so maybe that hurts some down ballot candidates. Maybe not. I mean, I've heard other people tell me, minority voters, saying, hey, I like Trump too. It may very well be that Trump is going to capture a huge minority vote. So it might not affect down ballot candidates. I just think in this year where the political rule book is out the window, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We'll have to do a kind of a post analysis to figure out what exactly happened.
I totally agree on that with the down ballot candidates, especially, you know, people who vote Republican, if they're stalwart Republicans, they'll go all the way down the ticket. But you're seeing a lot of people going to the voting booth. They press the one button for the presidential candidate and walk out. Mm. And a lot of our voters vote once every 4 years and don't vote in the interim. And, you know, the down ballot candidates are so important. They set more of your laws. They set more of the ordinances you live under. They affect your life more. And people really need to know, go down ballot and vote in every race. It's critical.
I think it may not be just the down ballot candidates. I mean, again, I don't know that a Trump or a Cruz necessarily, either one of them, hurts down ballot candidates. What, you know, maybe what happens though is if let's say Trump wins the nomination, then Cruz supporters, you know, who maybe they're not going to support Trump, or vice versa, and so maybe it's intra-party type of disagreements that affects down ballot candidates, not general election, general voter, you know, dissatisfaction with our nominee that affects down ballots.
So what kind of intra-party?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, remember when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton ran against each other? Very, you know, in that 2008 primary, very divisive and very aggressive. And there were a lot of hurt feelings going into the general election. You know, I hope that's not going to be the case here. But you're seeing a Ted Cruz and a Marco Rubio increasing their attacks on Trump, and certainly Trump has been making personal attacks on them. You know, it may very well be that after the dust settles in the primary, you know, there are some Republican voters with either candidate that just are sick of the process and they stay home. And maybe it doesn't turn off the general election voter. Maybe it turns off those who are staunch supporters of one of the candidates that did not win.
So during primary season, the Republicans really want to appeal to the right, the Democrats really want to appeal to the left, and then the general election comes along and people have to pivot and at least demonstrate an appeal right across a broader cross-section of Americans. It seems like that pivot would be easier for a Marco Rubio or a John Kasich than a Donald Trump or a Ted Cruz. What is your sense of that?
I think Donald Trump making a pivot is interesting in itself to consider because, you know, he has his way of doing things, okay? It'll be difficult for him, but I think with his policies, what he's going to try and accomplish, he's going to try and be the everyman. If you listen to his speeches, you know, things will be great in America. I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to do this for you, et cetera. He will try and be the everyman, and he's the kind of person who, with his personality and speaking, can be that everyman. And I agree also, if it was a Rubio, it might be easier because he's more of a moderate. Cruz would probably stick to what Cruz does because that's what Ted Cruz is.
Yeah, there's not going to be any pivots here. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Trump or Cruz get the nomination, they're going to continue to be exactly who they have been. I mean, Cruz doesn't pivot, and that's his brand. I mean, the consistent conservative brand. So he's not going to change his positions. I think what he would do is try to just convince the general public that his positions are right. He's not going to try to go to the middle. Trump's positions are actually more moderate compared to Senator Cruz's positions anyway. So on an issue basis, he doesn't have to pivot. Maybe what he does is change his tone a little bit. Maybe it's a more of a style pivot than a policy pivot.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Mark on the line in Dallas. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Hey, here's my two cents about Donald Trump, and I think it's the reason that he is popular is, yes, there is an anti-establishment sentiment, but what we don't acknowledge, and I think it's at our peril, is that he tells people precisely what they want to hear. And, you know, for instance, he doesn't say immigration hasn't been handled properly. He says, look, I'm going to build a wall and I'm going to have Mexico pay for it. He says we should ban all Muslims in a frankly frighteningly high percentage of both parties, Republicans and Democrats agree with that sentiment. So if unless we realize that, you know, the American electorate is frankly far more frightened than we have been willing to acknowledge, I think, like I said, that's at our own peril.
Yeah, I don't think Donald Trump is pandering to people, but you're right. He's much more of a populist. His views are less Republican and more populist and nationalistic. And so, you're right. He is tapping into, I think, you know, general population's fears and desires. You know, rather than taking a play from the party platform, he's just kind of taking a play from what the general population, the general public majority feels like. That's the definition of being a populist, and he certainly is playing that card. But I think it's legitimate. I think he's genuine. I just think he's that's where he is. I don't think it's a calculation in his mind.
Yeah, he struck the right chord that people want to hear.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Barry in Plano. Hi, Barry.
Hello, Chris. Chris, my view of things is that the United States Congress has spent a lot more time pretending to govern than governing, and I'm talking about both the House and the Senate. In both the House and the Senate, we have Republican majorities. Are they part of the so-called establishment? That's one question I'd like your guest to address. And the second question is, if they are part of the establishment, are they among the people that have made Republican primary voters angry?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think certainly congressional leadership and Senate leadership, that is there. You know, people who support Trump do, and many who support Ted Cruz do feel like the party establishment, if you will, is part of the problem. I mean, the continuation of certain, funding levels of the, you know, the national budget and those types of things. Yeah, I think that's what's giving rise to this. Now, whether that's a realistic perception, a correct perception or not, that is a perception. That's why you see so many of these congressmen locally, being challenged, you know, in the primaries. I mean, take Pete Sessions, for example, here in Dallas. You know, he's part of the National Party leadership. He's chairman of the House Rules Committee, a very influential position. But that brings with it some ire from those who want, you know, the Congress to really clamp down on President Obama's policies. With that said, you know, Pete Sessions soundly defeated his Tea Party opponent in the primary the other night. So that view may not be shared by the general Republican primary voter, but yes, it's, you know, party leaders certainly are under attack for being that quote unquote establishment.
And the fact they've been in office for such a long period of time. You talk to Mitch McConnell, who's been in office for 20 years plus. Pete Sessions has been in office about 20 years. People look at establishment not only by how they vote and what their policies are, they look about longevity. And a lot of times people want to change. They want to see some new blood involved.
Well, yeah, and look at Boehner, you know, a former Speaker of the House. I mean, you're in that position. You're hurting a lot of cats. I mean, you're trying to keep a lot of moving parts going in a single direction, and it may not be a direction that every specific constituency around the country thinks is the right direction. And so that, you know, anytime you're in a leadership position, you're gonna draw the ire of folks who don't like the direction it's going. Whether that's a fair, you know, criticism or not, that is the criticism, and that's just part of being in leadership.
Some observers on the Republican side who cannot stand the idea of a nominee Trump have floated the idea of a brokered convention for the GOP nomination. How does that work in general terms?
Well, so
this is Wade speaking.
if we come to our convention that's in Cleveland this year, by the time we get to our convention, if one candidate has not received a majority of the delegates, then there will be a brokered convention, or a contested convention, rather. After the first round of voting, all the delegates vote for, you know, their delegate, and if there's not a majority, then they're unbound and they can vote for whomever they want.
Personally,
whomever they want. So you'll see a bunch of – that's a brokered convention. You'll see a bunch of this kind of sharing and negotiating,
horse trading
back and forth for the nomination. I think, you know, a lot of people like to talk about a broker convention. I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, whether it's Cruz or Trump or Rubio, I think by the time we get to the convention, we will know our nominee.
I think we'll know a lot by the end of March because all the primaries are heavily weighted in March. And once you get to March 15th, your primaries go to winner take all, Ohio, Florida, et cetera, and people start picking up more chunks of delegates. And I think we'll have a good idea of the trend, and by the time we get all the way through the convention, you know, in July, we'll have a fairly good idea who the nominee is. He might not have all 1,237 delegates, but he'll be close enough.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next with Bill in Murphy. Hi, Bill.
Yes, hi. I'd like to ask your guests their comment on how this is going to affect whomever the Democrats nominate. I can't see that all this fracas and infighting and mudslinging that the Republicans are doing, regardless of who you like, is only going to help the Democratic side.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's always the challenge. I mean, then that's probably, you know, I think that was the problem back in 2012. It was so late in the process before we knew who our nominee was. And there was, so we had a prolonged period of back and forth and attack candidates attacking each other. We have fewer debates this cycle, and so there's less of that publicly in the debate context at least. But certainly you've got the top three candidates now really going after one another. But, you know, that's the process. I mean, I think whomever you're going to vote for president, you want to see that he or she can take a punch and can respond. And so it's part of the process. But I do share your concern that, you know, whomever wins must be able to unify the candidates, the supporters of the other candidates. And, boy, with the level of discourse, I'm not so sure that may be a tall order.
Totally agree there. You know, you want to have a candidate who could take the punch, like Wade said, and it's important, too, because they're going to have to take a punch from the opposition party come November. There'll be debates. There'll be instances. They'll be talking back and forth. And a lot of our candidates are getting tough right now. Hopefully, one of the results of this, it toughens them up for the presidential race. The other advantage, too, is by the Republican Party having their convention in July instead of in September, we will gel, hopefully, behind the candidate a lot earlier. And that way we'll have one candidate for 4 months instead of just two.
That's Neil Katz. He's executive director of the Republican Party of Collin County. Also with us today is Wade Emmert, who chairs the Republican Party of Dallas County. We'll come back to our conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372 or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour about post-Super Tuesday GOP strategy with Neil Katz, executive director of the Republican Party of Collin County, and Wade Emmert, chairman of the Republican Party of Dallas County. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. If Donald Trump wins the Republican nomination and the party coalesces around him, either to the extent that they would coalesce around any candidate or to a lesser extent, is the work that the GOP has done to court Latino voters undone in any way?
You know, I don't think so. You know, I was talking with a Hispanic reporter the other day, and she said, look, my parents are second generation Texans, and they're voting for Donald Trump. They want a secure border. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, look, in Texas, in our gubernatorial race, you know, Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick, both who are strong on immigration reform, got a substantial part of the Hispanic vote. I think it's wrong, and frankly, a little patronizing to think the Hispanic vote is so monolithic that they don't want any immigration reform. In fact, second, third, fourth generation Texans, you know, they're Texans and Americans, and they want to protect their country too. And frankly, they feel like if I've gone through the process or my grandparents went through the process legally, so should everyone else. So I don't think Donald Trump hurts the Republican Party on the issues. And I think the way he talks about immigration reform has shifted from, you know, his initial announcement. Instead of talking about, you know, Hispanics or Mexicans who come across the border and rape and kill, he's now talking about, you know, more of a nationalistic type perspective about we have to have a country. We can make our country great again, but we have to secure our border. It's more about the country and tapping into a sense of patriotism than it is, you know, attacking a specific class of people.
And you look at the Make America Great Again, which he's always pushing. If you talk to Hispanic people, what are their important issues? Education, family values, and especially small business and the opportunity to grow. And Trump is a businessman. There is a good tie there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Hispanic voters care about the same things that every other voter does. You know, education, jobs, you know, security. And, you know, whether it's Ted Cruz or Donald Trump, they're all talking about those issues. And so I think for Hispanic voters, like any voter, it just comes down to who do you think can deliver at the end of the day. And so, no, I think Hispanic voters, and in fact, I mean, I think you'll see minority voters come out strongly for, you know, Donald Trump if he's our nominee. You know, I was talking with an African-American the other day, a Republican. Actually, no, he wasn't a Republican. He was a Democrat. And he said, you know, he goes, there are so many of my friends that like Donald Trump. We like him. You know, we don't like, you know, the way we don't like Hillary, number one. Number two, we like his bravado. We like his style. We like the fact that he's done stuff with his life rather than just being a politician. So I think people underestimate. I think they'll underestimate the minority vote if Donald Trump is our nominee. Because I think he could get a good portion of the Hispanic vote and then a higher percentage of the African-American vote than we've gotten in the past.
Travis County elected a new Republican Party chair this week who has been raising some eyebrows within the party for, among other things, abusive and graphic tweets about political office holders of both parties and former office holders as well. We won't repeat those here. I will say I haven't seen tweets like that from either of you, so I wonder what you think about whether this is an effective way for a party chair to communicate.
No, it's not. It's clearly not. I mean, obviously, I mean, I think there's one thing. It's one thing to be, you know, very clear and blunt about positions and stuff like that and be very principled and strong on a party platform. It's another thing to throw out, you know, conspiracy theories and certainly, you know, those personal types of conspiracy theories about Rick Perry and others that this guy mm-hmm. was advocating. I don't know him, but he sounds like a nut. And I don't think those types of conversations, the way he's having them, are good for the party or the level of political discourse.
Totally agree. I served on the State Republican Executive Committee 8 years. So I got on his mailing list a long time ago, and I got a lot of those directly. And I looked at the paper this morning and said,
and can't get off of it,
can't
huh?
get off it, right? And I recognized the name immediately, so I knew who he was, a known quantity. And it accomplishes nothing.
So what do you do as people who care deeply about your party and mm-hmm. its, you know, potential within the country and within the political system? Primary season is always going to be fractious within parties, right?
Sure.
But then you have to walk this fine line as party chairs of mm-hmm. bringing everybody back together to come to the general election. Mm-hmm. What do you do with elements within the party that you have a strong belief are not just divisive but maybe corrosive?
Well, one, you wade into the problem. You know, you talk to them, you have conversations with them, you see where you could rechannel what they're doing to where it's a positive force for the party. These people have a lot of energy. These people had a lot of drive and determination. They wouldn't be doing what they're doing if they didn't care. You just got to channel it, have a conversation with them, and plug them in the right locations. And we've been pretty successful in that. The worst thing to do is ignore them.
Well, the challenge, of course, in Travis County now is that you know, elections have consequences, and he's the county chairman now, or will be when his term starts in June. So if he's you can't be removed from office unless you've abandoned your office. There's no real recount for procedure for county chairs. At some point, you know, if he continues, then hopefully somebody will step up and replace him in the next election.
Let's go back to the phones now. 1-800-933-5372. We have Juan on the line in Dallas. Hi, Juan.
Hi, how are you, Chris?
Very well, thanks.
Just wanted to make a quick comment regarding the conversation you were all having about immigration and ask a question regarding Trump. I'm a researcher and author, and I've been researching the U.S. Population for 20 years, written two books on the topic, and I can tell you that never, not once during that time, have Hispanics ever had a problem with the idea of having to pay or having to, pay a fine or go through some process. They've never asked for amnesty, number one. Number two, ask for citizenship. I mean, if they can get it, great. But what I've gotten over and over is we just want a way to work legally. And if that means paying a fine and going without committing a crime for however many years, then that's what we will do. So it kind of lines up with what your two guests were saying previously. My question was about the fact that none of the other candidates, not Rubio, not Cruz, not even the media, have really gone after Trump's lack of experience in the geopolitical landscape. And to me, that's a huge vulnerability, from a primary standpoint, and then even more so in the general election.
Thank you so much for your call, Juan. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Certainly, let me take one of his first points about the path of citizenship. I mean, I think Ted Cruz has been clear that there is no, in his view of immigration reform, there's no pathway to citizenship for people who are in the country illegally. I'm not sure what Donald Trump's position is on it, other than I think he said you can't deport, the millions of people who are here illegally. I think, though, to the caller's point, that their Hispanic voters are not opposed to immigration reform. But there can be no immigration reform until you secure the border in some meaningful fashion. Now, whether it's realistic to build a wall or not, whether it's even plausible that Mexico is going to pay for the wall or not, I think most people would agree that before you can have meaningful reform, you must have some type of a secure border so that you can have some types of restrictions that, impose some type of restrictions from people continuing to come in illegally.
Neil, what about the foreign policy question?
Foreign policy is a big issue right now because of all the unrest in the world right now. I want someone who's going to be strong in foreign policy. As Wade alluded earlier, under the present administration, the United States' image has fallen as a weaker country, as a one-of country instead of the leader. When the United States does not lead, there's a vacuum. And the presidential candidate I'm looking for is going to be a strong leader with a strong foreign policy who will stand up to a Putin, who will stand up to the unrest around the world. We need that right now.
Yeah, and what's interesting, though, is Donald Trump, in some ways, has foreign policy experience in a non-traditional way. I mean, coming from more of a business or economic perspective, if he has negotiated, great deals, huge deals with China or other countries, if he has experience working through, that process of establishing business and negotiating, contracts with other countries, in some ways that is what foreign policy really is. Now, maybe it's not, certainly it's foreign, having relationships with those other countries and maybe already coming into the job where, having a sense of mutual respect with the people you'll be dealing with. It's less about policy and trying to reinforce America's interests, around the world. But it's certainly more than, say, Barack Obama, a senator, came into presidency with. Foreign policy has traditionally been the weakest part of, presidential candidates, dossier of experience. And
although this year you have Hillary Clinton, a former Secretary of State.
Yeah, you do. And I guess there's questions about her service as Secretary of State, and certainly in terms of, securing our embassies around the globe. But yet she certainly has some of that experience. There's no doubt about that. The question is she the one? Does she have a record of success doing it? And does she give the American people enough confidence in her experience that they'll overlook other things and vote for that reason alone?
Foreign policy, you have to understand who you're dealing with. In my life, I've dealt with people in Hong Kong and China, et cetera, and you know the person. And once you get to know the person and the culture you're dealing with, it's easier to work with them. It's easier to reach an agreement. And Donald Trump, by being a businessman, had to learn the culture of who's on the other side of that table in order to make that business agreement. And that's foreign policy.
It sounds like you guys are expecting Donald Trump to be the nominee of your party.
I don't know that I expect it. I mean, he's certainly in the lead right now, and on the delegate count, the path to get the number, enough delegates, he's outperforming the other candidates, and actually he's even outperforming his own trajectory. You know, where we are in this process, he's gotten more delegates than he would need to get if he stayed on path. So he's, you know. The question I have in my mind is, you know, when does he stop? I mean, who stops him? You know, whether it's Cruz or Rubio, he's been successful in, you know, he's won more caucuses and primaries than any other candidate. He's got more delegates. When does that stop? You look forward to the upcoming, some of the upcoming primaries, and he's leading there as well. So, you know, I'm not assuming, but I would just ask folks, you know, explain the scenario where he doesn't become the nominee.
Is it your sense, Neil, that a nominee Trump, would work with the Republican Party in a way that previous nominees have to sort of jointly form a platform?
I think he would, because you really don't have a choice. You need to work with the party as a whole. You have, you know, different factions. You have your Tea Party. You have your moderates. You have your libertarians. You have your middle of the road. You have to build a coalition. Coalition is how you win elections.
Well, I mean, Neil may be more optimistic than I am about that. I mean, I think instead of Trump trying to go to the Republican Party and say, okay, what can I do to help you? Mm-hmm. He's going to say, okay, this is what I need you to do to help me. I mean, I think he will expect some, there be a working relationship. But I don't think there's going to be any pivots by Senator Cruz or Donald Trump when it comes to policy and positions. And, you know, he has a history of kind of thumbing his nose at the Republican establishment or, you know, Fox News, you know, the bastion of Republican conservative media. And he's saying, I'm not even going to come on your debate, you know. And so
excuse me for interrupting. Is the Republican Party prepared to take its orders from Donald Trump?
Well, I mean, the presidential nominee is really the leader of the party. And certainly if he becomes president, he's a leader of the party. And so, you know, does that mean that everybody is going to agree with more of his populist or centristic positions? No. But it certainly will have an impact on the party.
It would be political suicide for the party not to agree with him. He is the nominee. He's the chosen person. And that's what you have to get behind. Now, will he work with a Mitch McConnell or someone like that from the older school? I think there'll be clashes there, no question about that. You know, the same way Ted Cruz and John Boehner did not get along, et cetera. You're going to have that. It's part of the game of politics. But he will make an effort, but as the leader of the party, the same way Barack Obama considers himself the leader of the Democrat Party, which is true, he's the standard bearer, and he's the point person.
Neil Katz is executive director of the Republican Party of Collin County. Wade Emmert is chairman of the Republican Party of Dallas County. Gentlemen, it's been a really interesting conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Chris.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. The show's email address is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.